This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
It's 5:05 in the evening. Our first story is a follow-up of sorts, actually, to an interesting comment made 2 weeks ago by UMNO Youth Vice Chief Sharil Hamdan, basically about reforming the policies that allow blanket boomy benefits.
The idea is simply that rich elite Bumiputras or Malays specifically shouldn't necessarily be treated the same way as the Malay masses, for the lack of a better term, in terms of quotas, in terms of economic assistance, affirmative action, and you know, everything in that universe. So I think that's what I think is a rather uncontroversial position to take. There was no particular catalyst. I was just asked by the press. I think there was a researcher of some sort that mentioned something similar, and I was asked for a comment, and I said, in principle, I completely agree.
So today, UMNO Secretary General Tan Sri Anwar Musa echoed those same sentiments from Sharil Hamdan, saying that rich Malays must not expect and enjoy privileges which could otherwise be channeled to more deserving Malaysians in the country. He feels that old policies like NEP shouldn't be reintroduced.
He also went on to say that the task of eradicating poverty, particularly among Malays, was still unfinished. But in the true spirit of nation building, all efforts should include all races. So he goes on to suggest a needs-based policy. Instead, saying that if we take that approach, then every segment of society will feel that they're being looked after.
So he also said that if UMNO were to make, if they were to come back to power in Putrajaya, it would not bring back the NEP and would instead design a brand new policy. He also reminded UMNO to not forget why the party was rejected by the people and cautioned the party against repeating old ways.
Can I just say at this point that it seems a little bit, and I'm not questioning necessarily, or perhaps I am, the sincerity of the statement. But I think it's a bit suspect in terms of timing. I think this was something that you could have said perhaps when you held more power and influence than you currently do. And it's kind of something that you can say now when you're saying, if we come back in power, then we will ensure that all this is happening, all this will take place. You know, we need to do this, we need to do that. It's very easy to say when it was something that you could perhaps have done on your own time, you know, in the past.
Be fair to them. They were only in power for 60-something years and at one point held total majority over parliament.
You know, you're right. You're absolutely right. So the idea of moving away from race-based policies is something that's always been discussed, of course, by both sides of the political divide. And a new Council for Economic Reform was announced by the government yesterday. This is something, by the way, that we'll be covering in more depth later. But perhaps this whole idea of a needs-based policy is going to be one of their agendas. It's certainly, you know, part of sentiments that our Economic Affairs Minister, Datuk Sri Azmin Ali, has actually expressed in the past.
We want to ensure that the policies will meet the demand and the aspirations of all Malaysians. Okay. And this has been the practice of our economic policies in Selangor. And certainly, with my limited experience in Selangor, we should be able to expand that to the national level and to see how best our economic policy will benefit all Malaysians.
Well, at least it's good to know that at least their ideas are not too far apart from one another.
No, they're not. But again, this seems to me like a conversation based on logic that has been overtaken by the usual kinds of rhetoric that we see here in our country, where it gets very easy to just throw... once you start discussing race, I think everything just gets skewed really strangely. Whereas, of course, broadly speaking, the sentiment that we need to take care of, people who are most vulnerable in our society, regardless of race, that, I think, very broadly speaking, is a statement that most Malaysians can agree with. But once you start bringing up issues of special rights, of privileges, of special positions, that's when everything gets skewed, despite the fact that really what we're talking about is the ability to provide for people who need that provision.
And I think that just really boils down to our, I guess, discomfort still with talking about race and how that tends to be able to just drag the conversation in a entirely different way, away from the main point. And that's why I guess it's been used as a political trump card for so long.
Let us know what you think about this comment. Again, UMNO Secretary General Tan Sri Anwar Musa has basically said rich Malays must not expect and enjoy privileges which could be, you know, kind of channeled out to more deserving Malaysians in the country. Well, do you agree with the statement? Do you think that it is suspect timing? We want to hear from you. You can call us 7733 2900, and again, WhatsApp 018-789-8899. Tweet us at BFM Radio. Now, our next story is actually about medical marijuana, because the story around it is changing worldwide. More and more countries are decriminalizing, some legalizing its use, and some are even actively embracing the economic potential.
Researchers in California have found that cannabis is a particularly good treatment for pain, and it is in fact the THC that is so powerful. Researchers in Israel learned that nearly half of the patients with Crohn's disease who use medical cannabis no longer have any symptoms of the disease at all. And there are tantalizing early indications from research on the plant that some of the compounds found in the marijuana plant may someday be used to treat cancer.
That was Dr. Ellen Shackelford, a doctor in Denver, speaking on TEDx Cincinnati about medical marijuana. So now, Datuk Nazim Johan, who's the chief activist of the Malaysian Consumers Association of Malaysia, is calling for more openness to its possibilities. In his view, the government and other stakeholders should be more open to using cannabis for medical purposes, since there have been many clinical studies conducted in medical laboratories, both locally and abroad.
This is coming, of course, after a statement from Deputy Health Minister, Dr. Lee Bunchai, about how we are only going to be introducing products with medical marijuana should they be kind of very, very, I guess, very, very, very proven. Basically, we need to know for a fact that they work, that the efficacy is there. But when it comes to what Datuk Nazim is saying, he said it's going to come down to understanding how far to control the use of these products, since that's always a concern, as well as seeing how it can be used as alternative medicine.
And he also said that this could possibly be one way of minimizing the costs involved in the cost of treatment for diseases such as cancer, pointing to the use of medical marijuana in the United States, Thailand and Mexico. A few months ago, when Muhammad Lokman was sentenced to death for distributing cannabis oil for medical purposes, Pematang Pau MP Nurul Izzah came out to his defense and called for the decriminalization of medical marijuana. We spoke to her about this on the show, and she pointed out some examples in other countries.
If you look at countries like Canada and countries like New Zealand, regulations being introduced so that it can be utilized for medical purposes, and it can also be monitored accordingly. I heard the mention of cigarettes. People die more from smoking. And of course, you know, cannabis oil. So I think we have to be a bit more pragmatic about this. There's sufficient medical evidence to showcase its utilization and its impact on patients, you know.
So tell us what you think. Are you open to seeing medical marijuana or products that are kind of geared in that area entering our space, entering our country? Are you comfortable with that? Let us know. 7733 2900 is that number to call. You can WhatsApp 018-789-8899. Tweet us at BFM Radio. After this, we're going to be talking about the postponement of our former Prime Minister's trial. So stay tuned for that. This is the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Bombing frustrated minds. BFM 89.9.
It's the Evening Edition with Lynn and Calvin. In our next story, we're breaking down why former Prime Minister Datuk Sri Najib Razak's trial was postponed yesterday. Now, the decision was made by the Court of Appeal to postpone his trial over 7 corruption charges involving SRC International Berhad funds, amounting to the usual staggering amount of 42 million ringgit. Here is a snippet of Najib's defence lawyer, Tan Sri Muhammad Shafi Abdullah, after the decision was made.
They examined the merits of our application. They think that if they don't grant the stay, and in the appeal, if we were to win the appeal, the main appeal, then this entire proceeding that starts from tomorrow become nugatory, which means sia-sia. It'll be wasted. What will happen is there will be a retrial because of nullity.
So why did Najib appeal and apply for a stay, which essentially means that he is trying to halt the case here in the first place? So was it a delay tactic? The Morning Run caught up with constitutional lawyer Nguyen Yu. He gave a pretty comprehensive breakdown detailing the transfer of the case from the Sessions Court to the High Court.
When Najib was first charged, his case was at the Sessions Court.
So in the hierarchy of courts in Malaysia, we have the subordinate courts, which are the Magistrates Court and the Sessions Court. The Magistrates Court will try less serious offences, such as petty theft, assault, etc. And the Sessions Court will try more serious offences, such as rape, cheating, criminal breach of trust. And then we have the Superior Courts, the High Court, the Court of Appeal, and the Federal Court. The High Court will try the most serious offences, usually involving capital punishment or complex cases. The Court of Appeal and the Federal Court are the appellate courts, which means that they do not try cases but only hear appeals from the High Court. So what happened after Najib was charged was the public prosecutor issued a certificate to transfer the case to the High Court from the Sessions Court because the High Court was in a better position to try this complex case. So after this case was transferred to the High Court, trial dates were fixed and directions were given. However, the public prosecutor, and I think as a matter of principle, withdrew the certificate of transfer because he was of the opinion that the particular provision of law which allows him to issue this certificate is unconstitutional because it allows the public prosecutor to take away the powers from the court. This is wrong because in our democracy, there is a separation of powers between the executive, the legislature, and the judiciary. So each branch of government is independent of one another and should not encroach into the domain of the other. And once Najib's case is before the court, the public prosecutor, being part of the executive, should not decide which court hears the case. That is solely for the courts to decide.
So it was on that basis then that public prosecutor Tommy Thomas withdrew the certificate of transfer from the Sessions Court to the High Court because that basically, if not, it would have been akin to him, the executive, encroaching into the domain of the judiciary. And then once that certificate was withdrawn, the case would have been or should have been sent back to where it originally came from, the Sessions Court. But after it was withdrawn, the High Court judge, on his own motion, decided to transfer the case from the Sessions Court to him.
Here is where the dispute lies. When the public prosecutor withdrew the certificate, Najib's legal team argued that he could not do so because by doing so, he would also be encroaching into the domain of the judiciary. Najib's legal team also argued that it was improper for the High Court judge to bypass the High Court registry and transfer the case directly back to him because all cases should first go through the registry to decide which judge is going to hear the case. The High Court judge should have let the registrar of the High Court decide which judge should hear the case. The High Court did not agree with Najib's legal team's argument and proceeded to allow the withdrawal of the certificate and transfer the case back to himself. And it was on that basis Najib's team appealed. And when Najib's team appealed, they asked for the trial to be stayed, or in layman terms, for the trial to be halted, pending the outcome of the appeal, because if he succeeds on appeal, the trial will be a nullity. So the prudent thing to do is to have the appeal decided first, rather than risking a waste of time and cost for everybody. I personally don't think it's a tactic to delay the trial because there are genuine concerns as to what happens when the public prosecutor withdraws the certificate. I think it concerns procedural justice. To a layperson, everything that has happened here may seem to be lawyers being pedantic, but I think there is a need to adhere strictly to due process. Should Najib have been discharged in the High Court and charged again with the same offence in the Sessions Court, these are questions which the Court of Appeal must answer.
That was constitutional lawyer Niu Sin Yu speaking to The Morning Run about why Najib Razak's trial is postponed.
It looks like it's going to be a very long one. I think it was described yesterday, potentially if it had gone ahead, and it still will go ahead, but it was described as, you know, the mother of all legal battles in Malaysia. So I think it's probably going to be a lot like this, because once we move away from basically what makes headlines and what has been sensationalized, the truth is that it's a legal case, and I'm pretty sure that it's going to run exactly in as I think Sinew said, it looks pedantic. I think it's going to be like that. That's going to be the thread that we're going to be following, especially for non-lawyers.
Yeah, but I wonder how hard it will be for Pakatan to take the narrative for this, because there's so much riding on it for them. You know, they promised to get to the bottom of the 1MDB scandal, to get corruption out of our system. So if this case doesn't go so well, or it takes too long, I worry that people might start getting rather impatient.
I hope that will not be the case, simply because it is of such huge public interest, and also because once you people want to see the rule of law being followed, right? Yep. And when you want to, well, no, some people just want sort of mayhem and destruction. But broadly speaking, if you want to see the rule of law being followed, then it is going to be like this. It is going to take this amount of time. It is frustrating, obviously. I think everybody wants some form of resolution or just some form of forward motion. But it is probably, I mean, we'll be following it regardless. I think everybody will. But this is the first riposte, I think, of, hey, look how potentially boring this might be. That's what it looks like.
Yeah, and it really doesn't help that Najib is in the news so much, or at least his presence is still in social media so often. And when you see, I guess for people who don't really fancy him, who don't really like him, to see him doing stuff like, you know, Malu Upper Bosku and all that, I think it hits the wrong bone.
So Iz says, first they made a mockery of our financial system, now they're making a mockery of our legal system. What's next? And earlier on the topic of medical marijuana, Tenny said, anything in use for the good, you know, for example, like the days of morphine a long time ago, it's just like a kitchen knife. I guess the idea here being that you can use, you know, one thing can be used both for good or for ill, and that's on the subject of medical marijuana and how it might help with chronic illnesses. Let us know your thoughts. Are you ready for medical marijuana to kind of enter our sphere as perhaps, you know, complementary medicine? Talk to us about whether or not you agree with the issue of no more blanket privileges for Bumiputras. You can call us 7733-2900. You can also WhatsApp 018-789-8899. Tweet us at BFM Radio. Right now we've got a track by Thin Lizzy. The boys are back in town. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my. BFM 89.9, the business station.